I'd say I get here pretty early every day, and most of the time he is in the team room sitting there watching tape, you know, with maybe a couple other guys that he pulls along. So I think that shows his teammates that he's very serious about football, which he is. They're in with the huddle and in the film sessions. He shows that he's a competitor. I think the players, you know, the job of a quarterback is to earn the respect of your team, earn the respect of your coaches, earn the respect of the players, earn the respect of the fans. And that's what you sign up for when you play quarterback in this league. And he's been, again, I've said this since I've been back here, whenever it was, March, April, he's been great. Student of the game, learns from his mistakes, leads, competitive, tough, you know, fiery. A lot of good qualities to work with.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast training camp live edition. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me as always, the managing editor for TitanSize.com, the publisher of NFL Draft on SI, Titans player interviewer. More on that to come. And the yada yada king, my co-host, Justin Mello. Justin, Titans just wrapped up day two in pads of training camp. The coordinators spoke before practice, including that clip of Brian Daboll that you just heard at the top, talking about Cam Ward, his work ethic, earning the respect of his teammates. Highlights from practice, a fight broke out. Cam hit Carnell Tate for a 65-yard touchdown. One rookie defender is impressing, making multiple highlight plays. We'll talk about all of that on today's show. How you doing today, Justin?
I'm doing well, doing well. That was one heck of an intro for me, and that was one heck of a training camp preview, if you will. Eventful day, I think, by all accounts. I guess marred by a fight, if you will.
Yeah.
We heard from the coordinators, like you said, Brian Daboll, Gus Bradley, and Bones Fossil all spoke before practice. Robert Saleh and select players spoke after practice. I'm currently waiting on Solomon Thomas to call me for an interview in about 30 minutes from now, so I'm probably going to step away while I do that, and Graver's going to do about 10 minutes solo while I go talk to Solly.
Graveyard shift.
Graveyard preview of what's to come for my upcoming vacation, but... by all accounts, pretty eventful day at Titans practice.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We're going to start off here talking about the play of the day. Here it is. Cam Ward bomb to Carnell Tate. You absolutely love to see this. And I don't know what else there is to say. I mean, Carnell Tate has impressed since day one of OTAs. He hasn't been like the most outstanding performer every single day, but he's had numerous days. And, you know, he's throughout training camp, I think, since training camp started, he hasn't made any plays like this one. There's been a lot of emphasis on quick game stuff. Early in training camp, the Titans were doing a lot of short stuff because they don't want their receivers to go out and run 60 yards at a full sprint over and over again on the first few days of camp while their bodies aren't warmed up. So we haven't seen like super amazing highlight reel plays like this. It's even led to some Titans fans, we've had some comments about it on our recent episodes, saying things like, y'all are putting too much pressure on Carnell Tate. Tate's going to come in as the wide receiver three. That's what Ridley and Wandale and Ellick are for, is so that Tate doesn't have to be the immediate wide receiver one. But then he goes and makes a play like this at training camp, Justin, and you're reminded why the Titans spent the fourth overall pick on the rookie receiver out of Ohio State. This is exactly what we've been waiting for. You love the Cam Ward throw here. It's hard to see because it's happening so fast, but Tate doesn't have to slow down for this ball. He doesn't have to come back to it. It's like a perfect breadbasket. Hit him in stride. He's able to keep running into the end zone. What more can you say? This is the highlight of training camp so far.
Cam uncorked it. Right? I mean, that was a 65-yard bomb, like you said, and someone in the comments mentioned, perfect amount of air underneath it, gives Carnell Tate just enough time to run underneath it, doesn't have to slow down, hits him in stride, essentially right on the goal line. Someone asked in the comments, I don't have to put it on screen, who was in coverage? It was Alante Taylor, apparently. So Titans' number one cornerback in coverage. So for all those people saying, well, he's only beating up on Micah Robinson in backup. There was like a viral tweet from a few days ago, even one of my friends sent me, that said he was like, you remember which one, he's struggling against good corners. Well, he just beat the Titans' number one corner for this 65-yard bomb. It's kind of been, well, not to say it's been the story of training camp for him, but like the first practice of camp, he had the touchdown in the red zone that went viral from Cam Ward. Next couple practices, a little bit quiet. I mean, the defense won a couple of those. He had one or, you know, one to three catches per practice, those next couple ones. But this one right here, as you note, definitely the play of camp so far. I mean, a 60, and it's funny, like right before this happened, you and I were texting, sort of planning the show.
Yeah.
And we said, not a whole lot of Cam Ward notes coming out. Practice is almost done, and we've got almost nothing on Cam. We had more on Levis and Trubisky. And to be clear, like, neither good nor bad. Like, we didn't have anything much on Cam Ward. And then, lo and behold, we get this one, which is his best, you know, also Cam Ward's best play of camp. He has the two interceptions yesterday, which we'll talk about a little later because Brian Daboll talked about them a bit. Comes back today, does not turn over the ball, no interceptions, no fumbles, and he uncorks this 65-yard touchdown bomb to Carnell Tate close to the end of practice. You love to see it.
Justin, you said one of your friends sent you the Zane, I can't remember his last name, tweet about Carnell Tate not going up against top corners, or when he did, he struggled or whatever. That was me sending you that, and we talked about it on this show. So,
My buddies sent it to me in a group chat. I think Underdog, like, aggregated it, and one of my buddies had the Underdog tweet, and I'm like, let's relax on this.
Yeah, and the sourcing on that Zane tweet originally was the Locked On Titans podcast, which is, you know, relying on the same information that we are, not at training camp, so not the most reliable source for who's matching up on who and who's doing well against who. Got a comment here from Joshua 24-9er. Taylor seems to be on him pretty often. Well, yes. I mean, Taylor is presumably their number one corner. Tate is presumably their number one receiver. You'd love to see them matched up on most plays. You want your best corner on your best receiver. And the whole, I'll never forget 2018 training camp, Justin, when the Titans had two first-round picks. The last time the Titans had two first-round picks until this year, when their first round wide receiver was matching up on their first round corner, Corey Davis and Adoree Jackson. And the phrase that was thrown around throughout training camp, like on a daily basis, almost to the point that it got annoying, was iron sharpens iron. It's pretty common around NFL training camps this time of year to hear that phrase. But yeah, I mean, it's true. You want Tate going up against Taylor as many reps as you can get, because that's going to prepare Tate for, you know, the top NFL defensive backs he's going to see better than anyone else on the Titans roster. Is it going to prepare him for Derek Stingley twice a year? Maybe, maybe not. But it's going to prepare him better than going up against Micah Robinson. So yeah, Taylor is on him pretty often, and that's by design. We'll definitely get to the this comment, Atlas with three legs. Anthony Hill had more interceptions today than the Jets could even dream of having all last season. Way to spoil my tease in the intro when I said a rookie defender is making highlight reel plays. That is the guy. We'll definitely talk about him at some point later on.
What does Atlas mean here? The other Atlas. I think we go from one to the other. Are you not watching in real time right now, Atlas 6157? So I'm not sure what you're referring to, but hopefully you'll stick around.
All right, Justin, where are we going next? We're going to go back through the Cam Ward plays. I think his other best throw of the day, as noted by the beat writers on hand. And shout out to all those reporters who are out there at training camp every day producing terrific reports and notes and everything that's happening at practice so that we have something to talk about. But his other best throw of the day was a seed to Wandale Robinson, splitting the coverages, tight window throw on, I think they noted, was it a third down? I don't remember if it was a third down now, but it was another incredible tight window over the middle throw to Wandale Robinson, which, you know, if you've been following training camp on a daily basis like we have, that's happened quite a number of times now throughout training camp. Ward stepping up in the pocket, firing over the middle into a tight window to his probably most reliable receiver out of the slot, Wandale Robinson. That was his other big play in this practice. And, I mean, he threw the two interceptions yesterday, Justin, but those two plays, like, we know what those two plays are. It's Cam Ward late in the down. In a real game, would he throw that ball out of bounds and just live to fight another play? Probably. We can't say that for sure, but in training camp, try it. Try everything. Why not try everything? So I'm kind of like not hanging myself up on the interceptions at all. I think because, again, as I explained yesterday, they're not misreading coverage or not seeing a linebacker or defender undercutting a pass. They're him just trying to make a play and see what he can get away with. So with that in mind, and after today's practice, Cam Ward appears to be taking the step that we all hoped he would take. Granted, you know, it's just a week and a half or so of training camp so far, but man, by all accounts, Ward has been outstanding out there at Titans camp, processing faster, making quicker decisions, and connecting on 65-yard touchdowns like this one, where again, the ball's placed perfectly, catching it in stride while on the run, not having to slow down or come back to it, which, you know, we know that Ward's deep outside the numbers accuracy was a point of necessary improvement after last season. I saw yesterday during like routes on air, he hit Calvin Ridley on a perfect over the shoulder in stride play deep down the field. He's hitting Carnell Tate over the shoulder perfectly in stride deep down the field in a team period practice against a full defense. Like, I don't know. I'm super excited about what the Titans offense can be. The first week and a half of training camp has me pumped up.
Yeah, me too. Will Lomas, Titan Size, has a piece coming out tomorrow morning I thought was interesting, that we're so used to defense kind of winning these battles at training camp with the Titans, historically speaking. And that first padded practice, you know, specifically on the Monday where the offense clearly won, it was like, maybe it's finally a changing of the guard, if you will, and maybe we're about to enter an era where we don't have to rely on defense to be a good football team. It'd be nice if it would be the other way around. Well, before Cam Ward hit Wandale Robinson on that seed in between the coverage, before he hit Carnell Tate for the 65-yard bomb, I want to talk a little about the way practice started for Cam Ward, because that's where we were a little late to receive notes on. But Easton Freeze from A to Z came through with some real good summaries there. The first snap, apparently, for Ward, the first team period, checked it down to Tajay Spears. Titans were initially running a lot of quick game stuff, so once again, probably why we didn't have a whole lot of notes early on, taking away some of the big playability, if you will. But hey, he's got to hit his check down, right? We talked about the interceptions yesterday. Well, he hit Tajay Spears underneath on his first play. Sounded like it would have maybe gone for a first down, one of those 10-yard check downs. Next play, he hit tight end Gunnar Helm. Staying ahead of the sticks, according to Easton Freeds, gained about 5-6 yards. The next play was probably the biggest one of that first team period. Hit Alec Iomanner inside the flat for a catch and run that Freeze noted. Went for about 10 yards, got behind Amani Hooker on that one. Love to see that Alec Iomanner connection continuing to blossom at practice today. So after that three positive plays to start practice, momentum halted because Jeffrey Simmons seemingly did Jeffrey Simmons things. Now, I think we should take our first break before we get into the Jeff Simmons stuff. We could hit a super chat on the break. We've got one to hit. Coming up after this commercial break, a big-time fight breaks out at training camp.
The first one. We'll be right back. You know that 6 p.m. moment where dinner's supposed to happen, but there's nothing in the fridge? That used to be every Tuesday of my life. But now, I keep the freezer stocked with Omaha steaks. Tender steaks, flavorful burgers, even seafood, chicken, sides, not just steak, all delivered right to my door. Arrives frozen and ready to go. Yes, frozen delivery can be that good with Omaha steaks, because it's steakhouse quality without steakhouse prices. I grilled the ribeye burgers last weekend. They were beefy, juicy, and actually these burgers tasted like a steak, because it is steak, ground from real cuts. If you've never tried Omaha Steaks, start with the Burger Perfection Flight. Comes with 20 premium steak burgers from 5 distinct cuts, including filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, you can get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. It's football season, Justin, the best time of year to make sports bets as far as I'm concerned. And whether you've been betting your whole life or just trying to get into it this season, MyBookie is the best way to place your bets.
My favorite part about MyBookie, you don't need to be an expert. They have NFL lines every week, every game, Find your sweet spot, place your bets, and make betting fun again.
Yeah, Justin, and my favorite part about MyBookie? I can place my bets wherever I am, wherever I want to, before the game kicks off. Like, it doesn't matter where I am. MyBookie.com is available, and so I'll be playing there all season long.
And guess what? If you're new to MyBookie, the Music City Audible has you covered. The Bet Back bonus gives you protection on your first play. Sign up with our promo code MCA, opt into the Bet Back bonus, and take your first shot with a safety net.
Yeah, that's right, Justin. If your first wager loses, you get it right back. No questions asked. Make the most of football season. Make all the action as important as you possibly can. Get in now. Cash in on the season with MyBookie. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. But remember, Audible Army, always bet responsibly. Never gamble more than you can afford to lose. MyBookie! Welcome back, audio audience. We roll on here, Music City Audible recapping day two in pads for Tennessee Titans training camp. And the fight broke out. So it was during team periods after all the plays that you ran through. The next play, I guess he handed it off to Pollard. The play ended, and then a big scrum broke out. It seemed to be initiated between Austin Schlotman and Jeffrey Simmons. Then you get J.C. Latham and Dan Moore stepping in to try to break up the fight, which apparently angered Simmons even more. Simmons had his helmet ripped off. He starts throwing punches, helmetless, which, if you've been following Titans pressers, Robert Saleh specifically said, you know, emotions are going to get high, tempers are going to flare. It's all in good nature of training camp as long as we're not throwing punches. And here's Jeffrey Simmons.
He said that literally yesterday. You've got to audibly laugh at that, though, don't you?
No, I don't. Because look, as much as I like the intensity and like, yeah, it's fun. A training camp fight breaks out. Nobody's hurt. It's all good. This is not okay from Jeffrey Simmons. Yesterday, you had little scuffles breaking out between like Mason Kinsey and the guy that they just signed in the back end of the secondary, like two insignificant players. If they're going to get their emotions going, like, okay, fine. We don't want it as a coaching staff. We don't want that to happen. But if it's Jeffrey Simmons, who is literally the face of my franchise right now until Cam Ward really establishes himself, who's going to be on every poster and sign inside and outside current Nissan Stadium, new Nissan Stadium, if the Titans ever got a primetime game, which they don't have right now, Jeffrey Simmons is the guy that would be like standing there flexing for the camera on the graphic as they introduce the game during the pregame show. Like, this is the guy who everybody's following. He's the one guy I do not want throwing punches in training camp. I'm okay if he gets heated. I'm okay if he talks as much trash as he wants to talk. I'm okay if he starts pushing and shoving and grabbing face masks. Throwing punches is over the line, and he was rightfully disciplined for it during practice.
Listen, it's stupid, but you're taking it too far. I'm having fun with it. Do all 32 teams, does one of them get through camp without a punch being thrown? I mean, this is every year, and listen,
You're conflating me getting upset with punches being thrown versus who is throwing the punches. It matters. Come on, he's a team leader.
It does. He is who he is. He's going to do it next year, too. We know he's got a bit of a temper issue. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He plays with it. His aggressive mentality is the reason he's the player that he is. It's just who he is. You're never going to coach that out of him. No one's ever going to get that out of Jeffrey Simmons. I get it, but I'm taking it with a grain of salt because I expect it at this point.
Yes, but the thing is, he also has a history of personal foul penalties that really hurt your team. 15 free yards, drives extended. Like, that's a...
He's going to get another one this year that's going to frustrate us.
Yes, but why? He doesn't have to do that. That's my thing. Look.
He doesn't have to, but he's going to have 12 sacks, and we're going to forgive him for it because you put up with stuff when the good outweighs the bad. You got to put up with this when it comes to Jeff Simmons. It's who he is.
You can, but you can also say, hey, bro, you're going into your age 29, age 30 season. Like, it's time to take that maturity step here and be the leader we need you to be. I'm not going to agree with you on this. Like, I get it. I love everything about Jeffrey Simmons. There's one area of his game he needs to take that step in. It's not throwing punches. It's not ripping face masks off. That's a big deal.
I'm just at the point where I laugh it off because it's never going to happen. He's going to throw a punch next year. We'll talk about it at camp next year when he throws another one. It sounds like Wandale Robinson, good for him, by the way, all 5'9" of it, whatever. He emerged from that pile with Simmons' helmet. I'd love to know what happened there. And clearly the Titans coaches solely blamed Jeffrey Simmons for this, right? Because he was put in timeout. He didn't practice the rest of practice.
Right.
And Austin Schlotman and J.C. Latham were right back in there the next play. And which, by the way,
the next play, they continued practice. Alec Iamanner and I think it was Cordell Flott who was like, were engaged
Marcus
in like
Harris. A, I think it was
Marcus Harris. Okay.
And Marcus Harris. They
Marcus
started
Harris.
Fighting.
They started fighting on the very next play after this little skirmish broke out. And that's what led Robert Saleh to say, blow the whistle, everybody huddle up, cool down. He had to like gather the team and talk to them and say, hey, this is like this time that we have together right now is limited. You guys want to waste it fighting? How's that going to feel in week 8 when you're losing 40-0 because you wasted valuable time fighting during training camp? And then they all cooled down. They got back on the field. They continued practice. But yes, to your point, Jeffrey Simmons was sent to work on a side field with a strength and conditioning training staff member because he...
For the rest of practice.
Yesterday, Mason Kinsey didn't get sent off to do that. To your point, Alec Iamanner, Marcus Harris, Dan Moore, J.C. Latham, Austin Schlotman, none of them got sent back, got sent off to do that. It's who because of Jeffrey Simmons' stature on the team that they made an example out of him because it is unacceptable for him to do that. And clearly
that
the coaching
why?
Staff agrees.
But no, this is the first punch thrown. Saleh said after practice, it wasn't, I mean, obviously he doesn't have to tell us what he's actually thinking, but he said it wasn't stature. He said, you throw a punch in a game, you get ejected. We're going to practice with the same rules. You throw a punch at practice, you get ejected. I don't think it had to do with not being Mason Kinsey or whoever. I wanted to answer that question from Hayden, if you want to put it back. I know he's trying to make a point, you just took it off screen when I had it up. I'll answer it. Of course I want Cam to be the one watching extra film. You're probably trying to make a point. Well, it matters that it's Jeffrey Simmons and he's the leader of the team and you don't want him doing that. I get it. I'm not saying I'm right. You guys can have whatever opinion you want. I'm just saying I take it with a grain of salt because I've accepted him for who he is, and I don't think there's a single team out of 32 that goes through camp unscathed when it comes to throwing punches.
I totally agree. My point is not every team's team leader and big captain is the one throwing those punches. If it had been Pat Coogan throwing a punch, then I'd be fine with it. If it had been Cordell Volson throwing a punch or Xavier Restrepo or name any other... There are 91 players on the roster, Justin. I'm okay with 89 of them throwing a punch in camp. Cam Ward and Jeffrey Simmons cannot be the ones doing it. That's all I'm saying.
Should we move on? We can move on.
What else do we have?
Before we start fighting like Prospero.
Come through the screen. I'm going to take you up.
You've got the length advantage on me. Probably wouldn't go too well. For these next 10 minutes, I think I'm going to talk about a couple of linebackers. Before I got to take a break to interview Solomon Thomas. I'm waiting on Solomon Thomas' call on roughly 10 minutes ETA, but we'll see. Anthony Hill Jr., the rookie linebacker, who Gus Bradley noted is strictly focusing on playing the Mike position because I like this, by the way. They don't want to overwhelm him, put too much on his plate, let him work on one assignment, one position. Yeah. Get used to that so you can play fast at one spot instead of trying to, you got these rookies in over their heads if you're teaching a linebacker every linebacker position. So I really like the decision with Anthony Hill. Gus Bradley, by the way, had a magic eight ball when he spoke at before practice today. He says that about Anthony Hill. What does Anthony Hill go out there to do? Two interceptions. Now, there were some conflicting reports. Were they both off Mitch Trubisky or was one of them off Will Levis?
I believe they were both off Trubisky.
Okay, I believe they were both off Trubisky.
But not 100% sure about that, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I think Terry said Trubisky had like two or three picks today. We'll maybe talk about that at some point later on.
I would
on.
Like
but
to, actually.
The Anthony Hill second interception was the last play of practice. Two interceptions for Anthony Hill. Arrow pointing up after Tuesday's practice. And good for him because I want to talk about another linebacker in a second whose arrow's also pointing up. But you love to see this from Anthony Hill because, again, I don't want to say he's been quiet, but he's a rookie linebacker. That's a tough position to play. He's been learning. We think they've got entrenched starters there, at least to start the year with Cedric Gray and Cody Barton. Really like this from Anthony Hill. Two picks, big day for the rookie linebacker out of Texas.
Yeah, I think, we've been kind of waiting to hear more reports about Anthony Hill. It's been relatively quiet on that front, but we were also waiting for the pads to come on to really, linebacker play without pads on is like, you might as well not even be flag football at that point. It's not even real. So the fact that, you know, second day in pads, Anthony Hill's out here making plays like this. Justin, I've been beating the drum for months now that I don't think Anthony Hill is going to be able to earn a starting role and, you know, supplant Cody Barton, because coaching staffs tend to favor veteran experience over rookie potential and upside. But I'll tell you what, if he continues making plays like this, he's going to push for playing time sooner than later. I get it. Both interceptions were on Mitch Trubisky. But look, I've told you this about Gunnar Helm. I've told you this about multiple Texas players that have become Tennessee Titans. I watched every snap Anthony Hill played in college. And this is what he did. Like, he was a playmaker, always around the ball, undercutting passing lanes. A lot of the time it felt like, well, that's a, you know, bad college quarterback making a terrible read, and here's Anthony Hill jumping in front of the pass and picking it off. But, I mean, is Mitch Trubisky fall into that category? No, because Mitch Trubisky's an experienced NFL player. He may not be a starting caliber quarterback at this point in his career, but he's been pretty dang good throughout OTAs and camp as far as completing a high percentage of passes, minimizing mistakes. I don't know how many like explosive plays Mitch Trubisky is making. He's probably playing it safe. He knows the offense, etc. But here he is today getting got twice by a rookie linebacker, making a difficult position transition from college to the NFL. Man, it's exciting. It's exciting to see the rookies. Carnell Tate, 65-yard touchdown. Anthony Hill Jr., 2 interceptions in 1 practice. Hook him!
Good point. Great practice for the rookies today. Sir Kendall the Yapper read my mind, because Anthony Hill wasn't the only linebacker who was out there making plays. Before practice, Gus Bradley, who was one of the 3 Titans coordinators who spoke at the podium, had a lot of praise for James Williams. He said he lost 20 pounds this summer. He said he knows what we're asking of him in this 3-4 defense, so he showed up transforming his body to fit the role that we envisioned for him. He said, we like those guys who are former safeties turned linebackers. Remember, Robert Saleh had one in New York, and Jamie and Sherwood, a late-round pick who he developed into a really good linebacker. He says this about James Williams. He talks about that safety background and ability to play in coverage because of it. What does James Williams do? He goes out to the field, and he makes Gus Bradley look really smart. Because on what was described as a bad ball by Mitch Trubisky, I think it was behind the receiver, might have also been behind James Williams, because it was described that he snagged it with one hand. Second straight practice where James Williams has an interception, by the way. They're clearly high on him right now, the way they're talking about him, Gus Bradley and Robert Saleh as well. Arrow pointing up on James Williams. I've always liked James Williams. Is there even any question? Now, this might be crazy, but like, if you had to just guess which Titans linebacker is their best in coverage, I don't know that he'd actually play there, but I would say James Williams. Like, Cedric Gray was not, you know, good in coverage last year. Cody Barnes, a little slow-footed. He had a couple picks last year, but to be doing a ton in coverage, James Williams, with that safety background, I like him in coverage. And as Sir Kendall the Yapper followed up with, like, could he be like a big nickel, you know, third linebacker package, whatever, whatever. I really like James Williams. I haven't, you know, I've always worried that they don't like him, but I've personally never given up on him. He started week 18 last year, remember? And he had a heck of a game. Like, he's never getting opportunities on defense. He makes the most of them when he gets those opportunities. Great to hear him being praised by Gus Bradley today, and good to see him string together a second straight practice with an interception, with a turnover. Arrow pointing up on James Williams, and I really hope that he carves out a role for himself on defense, even if it's as like a specialized sub-package role in coverage.
Yeah, I've been exactly right there with you in terms of wondering if the coaching staff doesn't really like him, or if they have something against him, or if they just need to see more, or if it's like something in team meetings or other things that we don't have any knowledge about that are making him not rise the depth chart faster. I mean, it took forever for him to get on the field last year after most of training camp looking like the starting linebacker. And then like the last week or two, here comes Cedric Gray vaulting up the depth chart and then played the whole season as a starter. James Williams played a little bit here and there, but mostly didn't get on the field till week 18 when he played pretty well. And here he comes in training camp, making play after play. I mean, he was outstanding yesterday as well, outstanding today. Again, the pads come on. These linebackers have a chance to really shine. Did you mention, I'm not sure if you mentioned, that he cut 20 pounds of weight off his body this offseason? I mean, That makes me wonder if they see him not as a linebacker, maybe a big nickel. That's a potential avenue for, you know, getting him on the field and having him have a defined role that he can really own. Maybe it's big dime, though. Maybe it's like, go back to your safety weight from college and come play safety. Like, you can fit run gaps, get down there and get dirty in the box, but also move around and be fluid in coverage because that's what your background is.
And they don't have a lot of depth at safety, in all honesty. So if it's, you know, again, I don't think he's not going to transform himself enough to play traditional back end stuff. But I did briefly mention that the 20 pounds, and I noted that, like Gus Bradley said, he did that because he knew what we envisioned for him and how he has a fit in this 3-4 defense. Great call there, like a Jamal Adams, maybe later career type of role in the comments there. Stock up on James Williams.
Yeah, absolutely. We could take our second break here and then get into some questions from the chat, talk about some of the stuff Brian Daboll said before practice and the other coordinators, which, you know, snore, boring, snooze.
Well, we touched on Gus Bradley because he talked about James Williams, so there was some good stuff there from Gus Bradley.
And Bones Fossil loves training camp, and he thinks there's a lot of future coaches in his special teams room.
He's such a special teams guy. You got to respect it through the energy he brings every day.
Love Bones Fossil. At the podium, though, it is like some of the most overpraising coach speak nonsense. Like, let's be real. He's a veteran. He's very experienced at the podium. He knows how to give us a bunch of, you know, fluff without really giving us anything of substance.
He loves special teams, okay? It is
he
what
loves it.
It.
While we're talking about linebackers before we go to break, I don't know if you saw this, Justin. I think somebody tweeted it. A to Z Sports or somebody tweeted Dorian Mousey in like a individual drill where the linebackers are dropping back and then they have to catch a pass onto him. He leaped up and did the one-handed Odell Beckham-esque catch on air against nobody, but like, I didn't know Dorian Mousey had those kind of ball skills, or Mousey, however you say his name.
I imagine every football player does. He's had some praise from Easton this offseason. He's got some buzz as like maybe a 53-man roster inclusion, maybe that number 5 spot.
Yeah, totally. All right, let's take that break, and then we'll be right back to talk about press conferences, answer some questions in the chat, and while we're gone, we'll hit the super chats. We'll be right back. Welcome back, audio audience. Audio audience, you missed this during the break. Justin received a call from Titans defensive tackle Solomon Thomas. So he's speaking to him right now. That's not a joke. It's actually happening. And I'm going to carry the show while he's gone. Let's get that full screen view going. All right. Let's answer some questions. Dan Moore. Actually, let's start here. I'm just going to go in chronological order. Garrett Holcomb. Did I see a note about Luke Stalker being in control of the screen game now or something like that? That is correct. I believe it was Brian Daboll who revealed that during his presser this morning, that the screen game is under Luke Stalker's charge, which, that's cool. Look, I do think there's a world where they're grooming Luke Stalker to be a future potential Brian Daboll replacement. He was instrumental in turning the Titans' run game around last year when Bill Callahan left after his son was fired, and he appears to have a great offensive mind. I mean, we don't know too much about him, but the Titans have a bit of a history of tight end coaches becoming offensive coordinators. See Arthur Smith, who then obviously became a head coach, now Ohio State's offensive coordinator. Luke Stalker being in charge of the screen game is great. Give him something to do, a way to contribute to the offensive game plans, a way to exercise his creative mind, and hopefully try to repair an area of the Titans that was abysmal last season. Titans had, I believe, the lowest effectiveness or lowest success rate on screens last year, despite running them at like the fifth highest rate. Can't remember the exact stat. We said it on this show like a month or so ago. But yes, Luke Stalker is in charge of the screen game now. This is an interesting question from Blue Bomber. ETA on new spinning Titans helmet. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see behind me the spinning helmet that I've had since my dad gifted it to me for Christmas like 3 or 4 years ago. Look, I'm waiting on NFLShop.com. Actually, I haven't checked in like a month or so. But last time I checked, they didn't have the new updated Titans logo branding as this helmet. They have an Oilers version, which is cool and kind of timeless and doesn't matter if the Titans go change their logo again, but they don't have the current new branding. Last time I checked, I'm going to check after this live stream, actually, because I am curious. But for now, we're stuck with the retro, what do you call it? Vintage, maybe? Not quite, but we'll call it vintage helmet back there. Here's the Moore injury from Major Keys. Anything on Dan Moore? Dan Moore limped off the practice field under his own power with trainers shortly after the fight broke out, it sounded like, from the reports. And we just don't have an update on his status. The fact that he was able to move under his own power, I think, is promising for whatever severity or seriousness this is. Look, we've seen guys all over the league get banged up in training camp. Some of them turned out to be nothing. Some of them turned out to be season-ending or 8 to 10 weeks or whatever. We'll just have to wait until either somebody on the beat digs up the information. We'll find out later this week if he's returning to practice. And hopefully it's not a long-term thing, because the Titans, as we've continued to say, are incredibly thin behind Dan Moore and J.C. Latham at tackle. It's either Austin Deculus or Brendan Crenshaw-Dixon. Neither of those guys inspire very much confidence. We know Jack Conklin, Taylor Decker are out there on the market. Those seem like kind of high-ish level targets for the Titans to go after for a swing tackle. But maybe this little injury scare, regardless of how serious it ends up being, maybe it motivates the Titans to actually go bring a swing tackle in, somebody who can help keep practices moving. Because if Dan Moore is not on the field when they go to, they go to San Francisco. San Francisco, I don't know if you guys have been paying attention. Every defensive end on the roster, it feels like, is banged up. So I don't know if it would be a big deal there. But when they're doing joint practices with Seattle, it could derail the whole practice if you don't have a competent left tackle out there against that defense. So, moving on, Atlas6157, not Atlas with three legs. I call this one the original Atlas, which is no disrespect intended for Atlas with three legs. Maybe it's just me. I remember Atlas6157 being here longer. Anyway, he says, I know you both want Nick Singleton to be shipped off to a Russian gulag and fed a diet of scarab beetles until he passes away, but didn't I read where he bounced back today? He's had his moments throughout camp. I just continue to think that it kind of doesn't matter how many moments he's had, because number one, Tajay Spears has had more. Tajay Spears has looked electric every time he touches the ball, according to everyone who's been at practice. And Tony Pollard is your bell cow starting running back who's going to split carries with Tajay. Kalel Mullings was, you know, still taking reps with the first and second team as well, and has had some nice plays in practice. Also had, you know, been chased down on screens and tackled for losses. But I think that they're going to work Nick Singleton in very slowly, regardless of what he shows. I think from like a roster strategy construction standpoint, like more or less running Tony Pollard into the ground this year is okay, because after this year, he's not going to be on your team and you don't really, and it doesn't really affect you. Keep Nick Singleton fresh. Let him take a redshirt year and learn. I know everyone's excited because he's a rookie, and maybe he'll be really good, and maybe second half of the year he breaks out. I just think Robert Saleh was telling the truth when he said that Tajay Spears and Tony Pollard will be the team's bell cows. All right, I missed a lot of chats while I was reading through the starred ones, so I can go back and look and see what else has come in here as we experience the graveyard shift. No Mello, just me holding it down. I kind of owe it to him, right? Because he's been holding it down while I've had to go do my other full-time job stuff. Luckily, we're not taping Heed the Call today, so I can stay here as long as this stream goes. Here's a nice comment from Rude Skyboy. Big difference with the coaching staff. When Jeff started a fight last year, Callahan didn't discipline him and let him still play. Saleh pulled him and ejected him from team practice. I love it. I do too. You know who it reminds me of? Mike Vrabel. That's how Mike Vrabel treated throwing punches in practice. Mike Vrabel's a good coach. We know that for sure now. Brian Callahan, not a good coach. We know that for sure as well. So I do agree. Saleh, you know, being a little more strict, even though he's a star player and somebody that you need to be at his best this year if you want to achieve anything that you hope to achieve, you can't treat him with kid gloves just because he's a star. This is real. This is a funny and very true comment from Evan Tatum. I tweeted it earlier, but everyone hates Dan Moore until they realize who's behind him on the depth chart. And for the record, Justin and I don't hate Dan Moore. We think he's perfectly serviceable. Got a little bit of a bad rap last year on a Titans team that was a disaster malfunctioning unit in all facets, coaching on down. So I'm fine with Dan Moore. I think that, yeah, he was slightly overpaid, but he's still a guy that you can trust to not lose you games at the left tackle spot as long as he's healthy. And we'll see where he's at. Tyron Montgomery is still on the roster, but I agree, we haven't heard his name mentioned or tweeted or reported really very much at all. Another classic UDFA hype darling who hasn't really lived up, but we'll see. But preseason, we'll get our chance to see all these guys with our own eyes, not based on training camp reports from beat writers, but also Friday night, Titans practice scrimmage at Nissan Stadium. Should get some good info there. I don't know if we'll see, but yeah, we'll get some good info there. And Roster Grid's confirming he is still on the team. But, and I agree with this, more of a practice squad candidate this year. All right, let me catch up on some of these other comments that came in. No idea what type of injury Moore had, Brantley. It looked like he was hobbled, some sort of lower body injury. Maybe twisted a knee. Maybe he's just cramping. Maybe he had to relieve his inside. You know, maybe you never know with these guys. Maybe he's got a stomach bug. We don't know. We'll find out. You want to listen in on Mello? Let's see if we can hear anything. He's asking Solomon Thomas about pre-draft meetups with Robert Saleh, if he has any memories from that. Yes, Atlas. He limped inside with his own power. Here we go. See, I had to turn the lights on because Wampu's first thought was, where is the under cabinet lighting? And like, I did it live for you guys, like just a little bit inside my process. Comment from Atlas6157, Stalker is absolutely the next OC. See, I think that this is more likely than Shea Tierney, simply because Brian Daboll has taken Shea Tierney with him everywhere he's gone. So even if the Titans liked Shea Tierney and wanted to promote him to offensive coordinator, there's a decent chance that he says, thanks but no thanks, I'm going to stick with my guy and go be his offensive coordinator when he gets a head coaching job. But for the record on this point, and I know I've talked about this many times, but there are so many guys that are probably ahead of the line, ahead in line, in front of Brian Daboll to become head coaches next year. I've mentioned guys like Chris Shula and Nate Shielhouse, who are both with the Rams. You got Grant Udinski down in Jacksonville. You got Anthony Campanile, who interviewed for a bunch of head coaching jobs down in Jacksonville. Oh, don't forget about Mike Tomlin, Sean McDermott. I mean, that's seven guys right there. That doesn't even account for who may or may not emerge throughout this coming season. Guys like Declan Doyle taking over the Ravens OC job after spending time with Ben Johnson and Sean Payton. Guys like Davis Webb, who many are projecting is a one-year-and-done OC for Denver before he gets his own head coaching opportunity. A bunch of teams have new offensive coordinators that could become stars this season and jump Daboll in line for a head coaching opportunity. Not to mention the fact that 10 head coaches were just fired and hired this last offseason, which usually leads the following year to a smaller cycle, five or six guys, because you don't, unless you have a bunch of one and dones out of those 10, like a lot of these teams are going to give these coaches at least a year or two. And at that point, there's only so many jobs open and there are a ton of hot names. So I remain convinced that it would be pretty surprising for Brian Daboll to be a one and done here as the Titans OC. Two and done, 2 years and then on to a new head coaching job. I could see that being much more likely than a one and done for Daboll. So I know I've talked about that quite a bit, but a little bit of an updated thought process there with seven guys that I think are firmly ahead of him in line to be a head coach in the next cycle. Stalker saved Pollard's job, says Atlas. Possibly. Here's a good question. Any freeze two times? If Dan Moore's injury is something, who would be a target in free agency? Well, we know the obvious names are Jack Conklin and Taylor Decker. If this is a serious, serious injury, like out for the season type of injury. Oh, Justin's back. Hey, Justin, we're just talking potential free agent targets if Dan Moore's injury is something. And I was saying, if it's a serious injury, like miss half or more of the season level serious, which would be catastrophic for the Titans offensive line, I think that's the point where Taylor Decker becomes a little more realistic, because then you're kind of bringing him in to be a starting left tackle for you. You're not bringing him in to be a swing guy, which is sort of below his pay grade, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, you got to think Taylor Decker is holding out right now for like a surefire starting role, because he's that caliber of left tackle. I think he's a top 15, 20 left tackle in the NFL, in truth. He's a good football player, so that would immediately alleviate those concerns. But I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. I mean, Dan Moore walked off the practice field on his own power. He wasn't carted off the field. Let me stop you there.
We've already talked about Dan Moore. I went through and answered a bunch of questions while you were gone. And as I was scrolling through the chat, this question came up, which is why I was talking about it. But how did it go with Solomon, Justin?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, awesome. That's going to publish, I believe, Thursday morning on Titan size, so be stay tuned to that. We talked about, obviously, Robert Saleh, the defensive scheme, Jeffrey Simmons, John Franklin Myers, his first impressions of Cam Ward, the quarterback, how he overcame, you know, quote-unquote being a number three overall, you know, not living up to those expectations, but to still be entering the 10th year of what's been a successful NFL career. We talked Aaron Whitecotton, Tanzel Smart, like it was just really, really good, lengthy, you know, 10-12 minute conversation with Solomon Thomas that I already know, because I've been doing this for a while, is going to transcribe really, really well.
Did he say anything awesome like the Titans are going to the Super Bowl or anything virally quotable like that?
I don't know that I'll grab the vibe. He did say he'd love to win a ring for Nashville this year, thinks he could play his best ball. Some really good insight onto Robert Saleh, how the scheme has evolved over the years, why he thinks not only himself, because he knows it, but a guy like Jeffrey Simmons, who's never played in it before, why he thinks he's such a good fit for this scheme. Really outstanding stuff from a guy I knew would give me a great interview, because, you know, he's been a Walter Payton Man of the Year, you know, type of player.
Right. All right. I haven't covered Brian Daboll's presser at all because I was waiting for you or any of the pressers really post practice, pre-practice. If you wanted to get into some of that stuff, we can. We could probably take another break here. It's been 20 minutes since our last break, and then maybe finish out with that kind of talk. We maybe hit a couple more questions that I just starred. Let's do that. We'll be right back. Welcome back, audio audience. Justin, top level headlines coming out of the press conferences. What were your big takeaways?
Yeah, I thought Brian Daboll, you know, talking about the interceptions, didn't sound super concerned, but did sort of, you know, allude to the fact that I've got confidence in him going for Cam Ward's ability to learn and get better. You know, he doesn't repeat mistakes, he claimed, though I think we've seen him make those a couple of times. But I think my biggest takeaway from the Daboll presser was he ended that comment about the interception saying, I want him to stay aggressive. To me, it just reinforced that Cam Ward is the type of quarterback, and he's playing in a way that Brian Daboll wants him to play. He wants him to test tight throwing windows. He wants him to be aggressive, especially during training camp when interceptions don't actually count, right? So you love that. But I think one of the big, and he said lesson learned with those crossbody interceptions. I guess we'll see. Lots of focus on the red zone and third down. And the reason I bring that up, and that was in Brian Daboll's answers, just a consistent theme, isn't it? Like every time Brian Daboll talks about this offense, quarterback play, Cam Ward, it's red zone, third down, red zone, third down. I'm going to let you chime in before I make my final point about Dable's presser.
He did also speak at length about the importance of first and second down and staying ahead of the sticks and making it easier on yourself for third down. But I do think it was all in service of talking about how important third down is and try not to get yourself into third and long situations. And I think that that is such a crucial change from last year. And it harkens back to a bit of the Vrabel philosophy, which was like finding the hidden yards, whether it's special teams or whatever, and finding the leverage moments in a game, the high pressure situations that really shape how a game has, like what the result is going to be. It's those big time moments. You know, the difference between converting on third and goal or kicking a field goal, the difference between getting a couple first downs and giving your defense a breather and going three and out three times in a row. I said this all throughout the season last year, but I really thought Brian Callahan's biggest deficiency as a head coach was preparing his team for specific moments, for the high leverage situations. How many times, especially in Callahan's first year, did the Titans blow a fourth quarter lead or fail to overcome like a one score deficit in the fourth quarter and lose a close game? Even last year after Callahan was fired and Mike McCoy took over, the Titans played a bunch of good teams down the stretch last season and they played them pretty well and the offense scored some points, but the defense just didn't have it in them to get that third down stop. Like it's on both sides of the ball. We're talking about Brian Daboll, so we're talking about the offense converting those situations. But I just think that Robert Saleh is bringing like, I would call it a professional level of coaching and strategy and like emphasizing the things that need to be emphasized, where Brian Callahan was just totally underwater is basically his whole tenure.
Yeah. And listen, I think you made the comment that when Brian Daboll was speaking earlier today, he still sounds like a head coach, right? Like it is hard to get that out of you. And I don't want him to get that out of his system, right? Like as much experience and leadership this team and coaching staff can have, the better. So the other, if you don't mind me moving it along, the other comment that Brian Daboll made that I earmarked as interesting was that Luke Stalker is in charge of the screen game. the tight ends coach. This was interesting to me for two reasons. Number one, the screen game was diabolically bad last year, right? Like, you remember every time they ran a screen, it felt like they lost 3 to 5 yards. They didn't have any wide receivers on the outside that can block. It was either a penalty or a blown block assignment, and they lost. Like, it was a disaster. Point where, like, why are they still running screens, right? That's sort of what we started asking ourselves. That's point number one on why I find it interesting that Luke Stocker's in charge of the screen game. Number two is that when Luke Stocker took over the running game last year, it drastically improved down the stretch, right? We saw Tony Pollard after they fired both Callahans. It got a lot better. Can Luke Stocker improve the screen game this year like he improved the run game down the stretch last year? I mean, that's something that I'm filing away for maybe a midseason revisit.
Yeah, that's a great point. I will let you continue because I did talk Stocker when we were answering questions while you were gone. So go ahead.
Perfect. The last thing I have then, and I'm moving us away, because the pressers, we talked about Dable, we talked about Bradley and Bones. The Trubisky performance, 2 days in a row where he's been picked off at camp. This is not the same quarterback who, quote-unquote, lit up OTAs, the ball never hit the ground, he's 20 for 20. It sounds like he had a trio of picks today. He had at least one yesterday. There's no quarterback two battle, right? Like, the moment they signed Trubisky, I think they had essentially decided that. But it's interesting that he had a pretty terrible day at practice today, and it sounded like Will Levis had a pretty good day. I mean, we didn't talk, he hit Bryce Oliver for a really nice gain at one point. There was at least a second completion that was very impressive from Will Levis. He was a lot better than Trubisky was today. Is there something to monitor there? I don't know, but we're going to talk about it, aren't we?
He also finished yesterday's practice with like a bootleg rollout run into the end zone that saw the defense drop down and do pushups. Yeah, I do think it's interesting that like we were wondering, I think maybe Easton talked about this. I know Zach Lyons was maybe talking about this a little bit. I can't remember exactly who said it before. Apologies. But talking about using Mitch Trubisky as sort of like a baseline to measure Cam's progress against, like, his processing, Trubisky's, was really fast immediately during OTAs because he's been in this offense before and he's been in the league for a long time. Cam Ward slowly catching up to Trubisky in terms of like being able to make those decisions on time, quickly processing the defense and the reads and everything, and using Trubisky as a benchmark to measure Cam against. It's kind of funny now after these last 2 days where it's like you're starting to see why there's no QB competition, why Cam Ward is the clear-cut, obvious quarterback one. Like, we knew that. We didn't need to see why that. Like, we know that. They spent the first pick on him last year, and he had a, you know, promising rookie season in a disastrous environment. But now you really see it in training camp where Trubisky's getting picked off by rookie linebackers and had a couple days where it's like, okay, the pads are on now. The defensive intensity is higher, and Trubisky not performing as well as he was in OTAs, 7-on-7s that aren't real football, you know? So I still don't think there's a QB2 battle, though. I still think they're going to lean on Trubisky's experience. I mean, the goal is that he doesn't play, right? Like, that's the hope and the goal. If he does have to play, you hope the defense can play well enough that he can help the team win without cratering them, and that's sort of the job of a backup quarterback on a team that wants to be or sees itself actually competing for the playoffs this year. But they're also going to value his experience in the meeting rooms, breaking down film, knowing Dable's offense. Like, all those things are way more important than play on the field, because Cam ideally takes 100% of the quarterback snaps this year, unless you're blowing a team out. Wouldn't that be something if the Titans sent their QB2 in to take the kneel downs? Been a long time since Marcus Mariota came in for Ryan Tannehill to kneel out some wins. But I think that the battle for QB2, like you said, it was wrapped up the day they signed Trubisky. I still don't think Levis is going to be on this team. I just hope he plays well enough in preseason that they can trade him for more than a bag of peanuts at the end of training camp, you know?
It might be trending in that direction. He was good at the podium the other day, and he strung together a pretty nice couple practices here as Prospero 2000 USA. That sounds like a vacuum model, doesn't it? Like, I'm in the market for a new vacuum. I got the Prospero 2000.
I agree. We talked about this on Heed the Call yesterday, Will Levis getting sent to the podium at all. How many teams, look around the league, how many QB3, clear QB3s, are being sent to a podium after the first day in pads, by the way? Or no, this was on Saturday. After the last day before pads, come on. Not very many. I think that was, and we talked about it on Heed the Call, a calculated Borgonzi move to say, let's get this guy some FaceTime, front of the cameras. Let's let the other general manager on the league see that he still carries himself with composure and professionalism and leadership. And I don't even mind that he said there aren't 32 teams better in this league better than me. I know that because somebody tweeted this, and I want to give them credit, but I can't remember who it was, so I won't. Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. You need Will Levis to have the mindset that he's one of the best 32, even if nobody agrees. He's got to believe
25?
It.
He's got to still have designs on being a starting NFL quarterback.
Totally.
And I'll caveat what you said with this. You might be right. Like, it might have been calculated. But, like, beat reporters also have some pool on who they want to see speak at the podium. I wonder if they've been asking PR for Levis, because remember, he wasn't in the building last year almost at all. Like, once he underwent, they haven't seen him. So I wouldn't be shocked if they've requested him a couple of times. I don't know that for sure, but it's something that it might not be a Borgonzi thing. It could have been, you know, maybe they asked for him.
All right, Justin, I got to run. I do have some work stuff to get to.
I start a couple questions I wanted to rapid
let's
fire.
Let's do those
Is that
quickly,
possible,
yeah.
Or?
Yeah. This one's funny. The Jewel chats aren't actually comments. They're emojis that we can see in chat. Maybe it doesn't show for you guys. Doesn't show for me. I just have been reading the, I guess, like, the description of the emojis as if it
was, I figured, because there's always a description of the emoji, but yeah.
Walmart man, when I asked Mello how to convince my wife to let me buy an autographed Tate helmet, he told me to divorce her. You got any advice that doesn't leave me alone and sad?
To be fair, I did say that while you were heeding the call, but I told him to make sure he gets it in the divorce, that he gets to keep the helmet when they're dividing assets. But maybe you've got a better piece of advice.
Yeah. I think the advice is do what my wife and I do. We each get our own little monthly allowance of things that we can spend unchecked by the other person. We can use that on gifts for each other. I can use that on, like, sports betting, which I probably shouldn't be doing, but you know what I mean? Like, we have our own
it's
little
unchecked.
Allowance fund.
She doesn't know what you're doing with it. She's got no say.
And I don't know what she's doing with hers. She's buying makeup, skincare, who the heck knows? She could be buying whatever she wants.
Maybe she's gambling on sports.
Who knows? And that's the point, is that we each have, like, our own little say, where we don't have to feel, what's the word?
Bad. You don't have to feel bad for what you're spending it on, essentially.
Right. Or watched or whatever. Or, like, somebody's keeping an eye on it. So that's what I would do. I would suggest you set up a little thing like that. You know, try it out for a month or two. And then once you have it settled with your wife, then you go take your monthly allowance, which you could put away for three straight months if you want. And then you build it up. And then go buy yourself an autographed Cardinal Tate helmet.
Raver almost said the same thing I did, Walmart man. Because guess what? If you're divorced, she's not going to be checking your spending either. So it's like it's one, you know, tomato, tomato.
Answer this one quickly, Justin.
In Dable's offense, I wonder what Chimere's role would be and how he'd be. The reason I started this is Easton Freese, he's the only one in an article for A to Z. He noted that DK had a good practice today. So I'm not going to touch on the role, but he noted that it was his best practice of training camp so far, and he made multiple plays as a wide receiver. So nice to see DK getting involved there in the receiver mix.
All right. Any more questions? Sorry, I really have to run.
I thought I started one or two others, but if you've got to run, that's fine.
Titans post award. Yes, Sir Kendall, you must have been late to stream because we played it many times in a row, 16 times in a row.
There it is for you again. There it is for you again, Sir Kendall.
We all have little faith in the O-line, but we have hope. Hope is different than faith.
Thought it was interesting that Cordell Volson spoke at the podium today. Typical old lineman. Population of 27. I thought that was number one, impossible. Number two, it's the most O-line friggin' stuff thing I've ever heard. Is there really a farm he worked on? They raise cattle, corn, whatever. Come on.
In the clip yesterday that was posted by the Titans of Ward going, I think it was deep to Aya Manor. Am I wrong? Ridley? Somebody. Jackson Slater was playing center. That's
interesting. I didn't see
in a clip that the Titans posted with the first team offense. Keep it in the back of your mind if something else develops there. Last question here. We also had some jewels.
We keeping a book right now.
Thank you very much. Jung next score. Oh, and a super chat from
We keeping
man.
A book.
I use my allowance on super chats. So we really appreciate you.
We appreciate
that. And I'm not going to answer this question when Grant attacks. This is a great callback to yesterday's Heed the Call episode where we discussed the wedding gifts from the gang to me. And I'm not going to answer this one. Sorry. That'll do it. All right. Appreciate everyone for tuning in. We'll be back later this week. I mean, we'll be back tomorrow. I'm not sure if we'll be live tomorrow because I'm not sure if they're on the field.
I don't think they're practicing tomorrow.
They might be. If they practice tomorrow, we'll be live. If they take tomorrow off, we'll have a recorded episode for you. Probably do like trending up, trending down at Titans
losers?
Training camp.
Yeah, winners and losers something like from that. The first week of Titans training camp.
That'll do it. We'll see y'all then. Until then, remember to like the stream, stay after in like 15, 20 seconds from now, and leave a real comment on the YouTube for this video. Subscribe to the channel. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Until then, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.